clubs in Arkansas.
Unbelievable two-story lodge that, I mean, lodge is not doing it credit. It was really nice. And they were very gracious. It was, I don't know, what time was it, 8 o'clock or something?
Mm-hmm.
And they called and said, sure, come on out. So we had a wonderful visit with them and got a tour of the of his lodge that was essentially all cypress.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
Stairs.
Except hickory in his bedroom.
Hickory in his bedroom.
He wanted the smell of the hickory.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful, beautiful place right on the reservoir, and they duck hunt there and I guess have some other places too.
Yeah, sits right on the reservoir, yeah. Built on the levee actually that holds that,
overlooking the
created
levee.
That reservoir, and yeah. They can just walk out and get right in the boat and go to yeah. Where they hunt.
Yeah, it's
beautiful. Duck hunting is such a part, especially in the eastern half of our state, of the culture of Arkansas.
Yeah.
And I sat there reading that letter that Max Perkins had written back in 1932, and you know, I'm thinking, you know, here's Hemingway duck hunting in East Arkansas, but how many famous Americans that we, none of us probably ever knew about even, that would come into Arkansas yeah. Yeah. During duck season? You know, former President Carter used to come every year.
Yeah.
Canister Hodges
Canister
from
Hodges.
Newport would
Newport.
Take President Carter hunting. I think Dick Cheney still comes. Duck, if you've seen.
Quite,
but
yeah.
no, I think he still comes to Arkansas.
Okay.
So you have, you know, former presidents, vice presidents, ambassadors, movie stars. I'm told nobody can hang out for 60 days because that's how long our duck season is. But I'm told that if you could kind of just be a fly on the wall and hang out at the Stuttgart airport for those 60 yeah. days, you would be amazed yeah. at the faces you yeah. recognize.
And
flying,
you know,
private planes into our state during this time of year.
Anecdotally, from what we heard at the Slovak Oyster Supper, while some of the places maybe had not a lot of ducks, they had a lot of ducks down there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw pictures of just everybody in the party limiting out every day. So I guess it depends. So Stuttgart still, and as usual, still has ducks.
The capital of the world, as yeah. it proclaims yeah. itself.
Well, I tried not to eat very much that day, so I wanted to be able to enjoy the oyster and, you know, do my share. I felt like I did my share.
I think you did.
But I was full. I'll mm-hmm. have to say that.
I was also.
And I thought it was interesting. About the time we started leaving, the fathers, the priests, came out of the back room.
Yes, they have a separate room yes. for all of the priests from the
Diocese of Little
Rock.
Now, someone told me, it may have been you, that Senator Lincoln Blanche, they would let her
yes.
come to the back
yes,
room.
Yes, when
yeah.
she was a senator, yeah. she would actually, well, she wouldn't try to come in. She didn't want to break the rules, but she would yeah. always work the crowd
yeah.
outside.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
And you can get to go, and a lot of people do. So I think
huge
she would get her
to go
plate. Yeah.
Now, I would also say,
but you can't go over there and buy a ticket. Let me say that
no,
again.
You
got
to
have a contact.
Up to the door. No, you got to know somebody.
Yeah.
This guy that you know,
Steve,
our connections,
uh-huh.
he has your name written on the back of these. He had others with people's names
yes.
on them.
Uh-huh.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, I remember the first time I took you, Paul, you said you felt like you were in a Colombian drug deal because we pull up and I always call this guy on his cell phone
him.
And
I'll
he kind of comes out behind the truck and I pay him cash
yeah,
up for the tickets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Makes you feel kind of special now that
yeah.
you know
yeah.
somebody.
Yeah.
But you get requests all the time, don't you?
Oh, people, because yeah, I write about this event. So people, last week, people were just sending me all these emails. How do I get in? How do I get a ticket? It's like, you got to know somebody.
I don't know.
And I can only get two.
So, yeah, that's right.
It's, yeah.
You can't add an extra. He doesn't
so
have
be
an extra.
Nice to me. I can drop you from the list at any time. Just
well,
so
I'm
know.
Amazed at how good the fried oysters are. I mean, these guys have been doing it forever.
They know how to bread them.
They've
just
got
right.
it right. They've got the temperature right. You don't taste the grease that tastes like old grease. However they do it, they have got it down to an art, and they're really fantastic.
Well, you know, I was talking about the famous people, whether it was a Hemingway many years ago or a Dick Cheney or a Jimmy Carter now that come to Arkansas during duck season. And I thought back, as you know, a few weeks ago, you didn't get to be a part of this, but I had gone down to the Little Siberia camp when Dickie Brennan,
right,
of the Brennan family of New Orleans, prepared dinner for us. And I was thinking, you know, for those of us who are foodies, I mean, it doesn't matter where you are in the country or the world. I mean, the Brennan name is just golden. That's what it's
sure.
one of the
oh, yeah.
top names in American food. And here's Dickie Brennan down near DeWitt, Arkansas, of all things, serving this meal. He had driven up, so he brought the the big lemon fish, also known as cobia. They call them lemon fish in Louisiana. Yeah. But out, and he had it thin sliced. He was so good, he sliced it almost where you could see through it. And we had that as sushi to start with. And then we had the wild boar sausages. Then we had the turtle soup.
Yes.
I don't want to leave a course off. Then we had the fried oysters, which were as big as the ones at Slovak. Then we had the crab dip with fresh crab meat on French bread. That's five. Then we had the salad. Then we had the prime rib that he had done.
Goodness. Some
seven course meal.
Now what
prepared
this was the
by Dickie Brennan near DeWitt, Arkansas.
This was the Southern Food Museum.
Well, I'm on the board of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum along with Randy Ensminger from Little Rock. Dickie used to be on that board, and Randy got to know him, and it turns out that they were both big hunters, and Dickie would come up to Arkansas every year to hunt for a few days when he could get away. So in exchange for getting to hunt, he gets to prepare dinner. I was lucky enough, since I serve on that board with Randy, to be invited to dinner that Dickie prepared.
And you're the you and Randy, the Arkansas reps on
representatives
that
on that board.
Rex, I don't, you know, we try to avoid politics and being political on this show, but you know, I love Arkansas, and I never want to see Arkansas shortchanged in any way. And sometimes I feel like we don't get our just desserts. I think that museum board needs three Arkansas
reps. There you go.
We need to think about that.
So you can come to some of these events
and
like this.
Got a good candidate for that selection.
Oh, I can guess it. Well, we both were lucky enough to be part of the selection process for our new Food Hall of Fame, and we can't give away in advance who was selected.
No, but it's
an event coming up. But quite frankly, and this is a project of the Department of Arkansas Heritage, but I think it's long overdue.
Long overdue, and I think people are going to enjoy this year, but they'll be able to tell by this year because we worked real hard at not having too many people in.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of work to do, and I think this will just be the beginning. The other people and restaurants and food people and cooks and places and events are going to really get excited about it now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, just so overdue to have an Arkansas Food Hall of Fame. Not only restaurants, but also events
right.
such as the Slovak Oyster
right.
Supper.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of events that right. we will be putting in also.
Grady and, Fish
and
Fry.
And proprietors right. and famous people in the food industry. And again, I know I'm the old scratched record because I've talked about this on these shows before so often, but you know, like in so many other things, we're kind of a state in between. We're not wholly Southern, but we're mostly Southern, but we're a little bit Midwestern, a little bit Southwestern. Often we get left out, and food's the same way. I mean, Memphis yeah. barbecue gets so much attention, and
right.
Kansas City barbecue, and Louisiana cooking, and I'm talking about Dickie just to the south of us, and people love writing about the Mississippi Delta, and so Arkansas's cuisine has never been given, I don't think, on the national stage the recognition
right.
that
yeah.
it deserves.
And this events like the Hall of Fame, I think, is a big step forward.
It is really hard work, Paul, but somebody's got to do it, you know, and that is
yeah.
to go to these food events like we go to.
Right.
And to go to these local restaurants like we go to.
You have to eat.
And help publicize them and have to get the word out.
You have to eat stuff. It's, you know, oysters and barbecue sandwiches and plate lunches and fried catfish. I'm getting hungry, Rex.
Yeah.
What's our next adventure? Well, I'll tell you what's coming up. And that's the hog killing at the Eddie Maharin Center.
I may try to make that work this
now
year.
Is
that on a Saturday?
It's on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one, but I think it's February.
Find out.
Where they slaughter the hog on the grounds. If we get there early enough, we can see them shoot it in the head.
We want to see it all
the whole
if we
thing,
go
experience
that far.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
And then they auction off every part of the hog.
Pig.
Ear. They cut the head in half so everybody can get a shot at part of the hog head.
And have some brains and eggs.
Tails, brains, everything is just fantastic. And then we have a potluck lunch,
mm-hmm.
which, as you might imagine, is wonderful. And they cook, I think the only thing, they make sausage, have some of that, and they cook the loin, and they cook the liver.
And this is at Pocahontas.
The Pocahontas, okay. The Eddie Maharin Center. And it's their fundraiser. That's a community center, the African-American community center there. And they've been doing it, I don't know, 15 or 20 years. And it started, and it still is, an opportunity for young people to remember and learn the old ways. That's why they have it in when it's cold in the wintertime, when people used to slaughter the hogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they make cracklings, render the fat, and make the cracklings. And it's really just a wonderfully neat event. And it kind of reminds me, when I go there, of a lot of the places that you and I love, the restaurants that we love, that you know, we're losing the people that know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. We really
those
are.
Old hog killings, there's not many people that know how to do that. And a lot of the restaurants that we go to, they don't survive the loss of the founder, the man or woman who's started it. Kids don't want to do it. Not that much money, a lot of work. And nobody knows how to butcher a hog. Don't have to these days.
Don't have to anymore.
And so
they don't.
Nobody knows how to do it. So one of the things they do at the Eddie Maharin Center is they have the Boy Scout troop come out and help cut up the hog. Luckily, the county judge of Randolph County was a butcher before he became county judge. So he supervises that.
Yeah.
And
it's a real butcher on the ground.
Yeah, it's a real neat event. I've got pictures of the actual butchering of the hog. Most people don't really like to look at it because, you know, it is what that is. Now, they don't actually shoot the hog in front of the kids. I believe they shoot the hogs earlier that morning. But I think you get to see them scald the hide and scrape off the hair. I mean, it's just everything that you'd want to be able to do. And who knows, Rex? You know, we may be headed to that. We may have to kill our own hogs before we
do. You know, one of the places when I was growing up down in Clark County that my dad and I loved to quail hunt was this farm out near a little community called Manchester. And the gentleman who owned that farm was Mr. Bullock. He was an African-American gentleman with one arm. And we would often see him out while we were quail hunting. He liked to squirrel and rabbit hunt with one arm.
One arm.
Yeah, and we've seen him before shoot a rabbit. Great shot. But Mr. Bullock, I mean, it was like going back in time. And this is in the 70s, but it could have been in the 20s. If you looked at his house, he had a little garden, but he had a hog pen right behind the house. And my dad had a sporting goods store, and my dad would take him shells, shotgun shells, for his rabbit and squirrel hunting. And in exchange, he would give us sausage when he would kill a hog.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's what we would get. We would get to hunt on his land. It's the main thing we would get.
Yeah.
But we would always have some of Mr. Bullock's sausage. But one of the interesting things, because I love local histories, and as I got into Clark and Dallas County history over in that area, there had been, before the Civil War, a Bullock plantation in that same area, and as you know, slaves would often take on the names of the slave masters, and I'm sure Mr. Bullock was obviously descended from slaves who had worked on the Bullock plantation, and he was old in the 70s, so
he
would have gone back to very early in the century.
I was raised with the Clark brothers at Imboden, Mark Clark and Preston Clark, and their father, Otis Clark, his farm that he was raised on was between Imboden and Smithfield, back out of what they call Yeager Holler.
Yeager Holler.
And his mother, Mr. Clark's mother,
E-R,
right. His mother and two sisters, old May's sisters, still lived on the farm back out in Yeager Holler. And we'd go out there, and, you know, it's just paradise for boys. Just Miss Clark would make, and this is not hyperbole, this is the truth, she would make biscuits and gravy every morning for the animals.
Oh, my goodness.
She had dogs. She had pet deers that would come up, cooked it on an outside wood stove, just had an old bonnet. She would hunt with an old double-hammered shotgun.
Oh, that's like something out of a movie.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely out of a movie. But Mr. Clark could, one thing, he could call in crows, get on top of the hill and make crow calling sounds, and pretty soon here they'd come. But he showed us one time he said, boy, sometimes if you get lost, you have to eat a bird. And he would take a bird that we would kill, and you'd gut it, of course, and then just wrap it in clay and throw it in the fire and let it bake, feathers and all, head, everything. And once it was baked good and hard, you'd break that clay off, and it would strip all the feathers and everything off. And there you had, you know, a delicately roasted quail or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, living off the land.
My dad, and again, this is when wild quail, when you could find a lot of them in Arkansas, but he taught me some good lessons on how you kept permission to hunt on all these places he hunted, because often if we had a good day, we would actually clean the quail in the field. And if we were hunting on the Bullock farm, or we'd hunt on the Honeycutt farm or the Pennington farm out that way, and he would take two or three of those quail that he had already cleaned and go by the house and ring the doorbell.
Oh, and give
and nobody
some.
Turned down quail. Yeah, would you like a few quail to put in the refrigerator? Yeah.
Well, you know, I've heard guys talk about, and you probably remember this too, that literally wear the dogs out hunting quail. Mm-hmm. Just wear them out. Feet would be bleeding. There were so many. And I've told you, we would hunt quail. We didn't have a dog. You didn't need a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Just flush them walking through the pastures. And in fact, we talked with Mr. Leland about, he's obviously has a real interest in reviving the quail habitat and quail.
I thought he's got a lot of land in northwest Arkansas that he would like to do some things.
He was talking to us about it, and someone said, "Well, you know, there's some money with this foundation." He said, "Son, I don't need any money.
I need a biologist.
I want advice."
Yeah, exactly.
I thought, he does not need any money.
Well,
we visited once. I don't know if you were on that trip with us or not, at the Pea Ridge National Historic Site, and Professor DeBlack and Mark Chris. It was a Civil War thing, and so the guys there at Pea Ridge actually shot a cannon for us and put on a little show, which was really neat. Mm-hmm. But one of the rangers there is a big bird hunter.
Oh, yeah.
And he's really passionate about establishing
this. Pea Ridge is one of our lead demonstration sites.
They're hoping that they can convince landowners around Pea Ridge, the site, to get in on the plan, too.
One of the things they've done at Pea Ridge is they've brought back the native grasses. They're truly trying to make it look as much like it would have looked in the 1860s.
Yeah.
And now they've got to convince surrounding landowners to get rid of fescue, which actually is bad for quail, and bring back the native Arkansas grasses. So long live the bobwhite quail. I hope they have a lot.
I think I just saw we had the Game and Fish did a seminar or something recently.
Yeah.
So I think maybe there's hope. So maybe next year, if we ever do the Hemingway again, it'll be pin raised. But, you know, within a decade, maybe our sons will be able to hunt wild quail. Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, here's to Hemingway, and I'm hungry for a quail dinner again.
Maybe some nice rum.
You've been listening to Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, a regular feature on Radio Cows. That's Rex Nelson, head of corporate communications for Simmons Bank and writer of the food blog Southern Fried. And Paul Austin, executive director of the Arkansas Humanities Council. To hear this and other great Chewing the Fat episodes in their entirety, subscribe to the Chewing the Fat podcast at cows.org/podcasts.
Radio Cows is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, visit cows.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotz, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.
Been given, I don't think, on the national stage, the recognition that it deserves.
And this events like the Hall of Fame, I think, is big step forward.
It is really hard work, Paul, but somebody's got to do it, and that is to go to these food events like we go to.
Right.
And to go to these local restaurants like we go to.
You have to eat.
And help publicize them and have to get the word out.
You have to eat stuff. It's, oysters and barbecue sandwiches and plate lunches and fried catfish. I'm getting hungry, Rex.
Yeah.
What's our next adventure? Well, I'll tell you what's coming up. And that's the hog killing at the Eddie Maharin Center.
I might try to make that work this
now
year.
Is
that on a Saturday?
It's on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one, but I think it's February.
Find out.
Where they slaughter the hog on the grounds. If we get there early enough, we can see them shoot it in the head. And
we want to see it all if we
thing.
Go
Experience
that far.
Whole thing.
Yeah.
And then they auction off every part of the hog.
Pig.
Ear.
Yeah.
They cut the head in half so everybody can get a shot at part of the hog head.
And have some brains and eggs.
Tails, brains, everything is just fantastic. And then we have a potluck lunch,
mm-hmm.
which, as you might imagine, is wonderful. And they cook, I think the only thing, they make sausage. They have some of that. And they cook the loin, and they cook the liver.
And this is at Pocahontas.
At Pocahontas, okay. The Eddie Mae Heron Center. And it's their fundraiser. That's a community center, the African-American community center there. And they've been doing it, I don't know, 15 or 20 years. And it started, and it still is, an opportunity for young people to remember and learn the old ways. That's why they have it in when it's cold in the wintertime, when people used to slaughter the hogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they make cracklings, render the fat, and make the cracklings. And it's really just a wonderfully neat event. And it kind of reminds me, when I go there, of a lot of the places that you and I love, the restaurants that we love, that we're losing the people that know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. We really are.
Those old hog killings, there's not many people that know how to do that. And a lot of the restaurants that we go to, they don't survive the loss of the founder, the man or woman who's started it. Kids don't want to do it. Not that much money, a lot of work. And nobody knows how to butcher a hog. Don't have to these days.
Don't have to anymore.
And
so
nobody knows how to do it. So one of the things they do at the Eddie Mae Heron Center is they have the Boy Scout troop come out and help cut up the hog. Luckily, the county judge of Randolph County was a butcher before he became county judge. So he supervises that.
Yeah.
And
it's a real butcher on the ground.
Yeah, it's a real neat event. I've got pictures of the actual butchering of the hog. Most people don't really like to look at it because, it is what that is. Now, they don't actually shoot the hog in front of the kids. I believe they shoot the hogs earlier that morning. But I think you get to see them scald the hide and scrape off the hair. I mean, it's just everything that you'd want to be able to do. And who knows, Rex? You know, we may be headed to that. We may have to kill our own hogs before we
do. One of the places when I was growing up down in Clark County that my dad and I loved to quail hunt was this farm out near a little community called Manchester. And the gentleman who owned that farm was Mr. Bullock. He was an African-American gentleman with one arm. And we would often see him out while we were quail hunting. He liked to squirrel and rabbit hunt with one arm.
One arm.
Yeah, and we've seen him before shoot a rabbit. Great, great shot. But Mr. Bullock, it was like going back in time. And this is in the 70s, but it could have been in the 20s. If you looked at his house, he had a little garden, but he had a hog pen right behind the house. And my dad had a sporting goods store, and my dad would take him shells, shotgun shells, for his rabbit and squirrel hunting. And in exchange, he would give us sausage when he would kill a hog.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's what we would get. We would get to hunt on his land. It's the main thing we would get.
Yeah.
But we would always have some of Mr. Bullock's sausage. But one of the interesting things, because I love local histories, and as I got into Clark and Dallas County history over in that area, there had been, before the Civil War, a Bullock plantation in that same area, and as you know, slaves would often take on the names of the slave masters, and I'm sure Mr. Bullock was obviously descended from slaves who had worked on the Bullock plantation, and he was old in the 70s, so
he
would have gone back to very early in the century.
I was raised with the Clark brothers at Imboden, Mark Clark and Preston Clark, and their father, Otis Clark, his farm that he was raised on was between Imboden and Smithfield, back out of what they call Yeager Holler.
Yeager Holler.
And his mother, Mr. Clark's mother.
H-O-L-L-E-R.
E-R, right. His mother and two sisters, old May's sisters, still lived on the farm back out in Yeager Holler. And we'd go out there, and, it was just paradise for boys. Just Miss Clark would make, and this is not hyperbole, this is the truth, she would make biscuits and gravy every morning for the animals.
Oh, my goodness.
She had dogs. She had pet deers that would come up, cooked it on an outside wood stove, just had an old bonnet. She would hunt with an old double-hammered shotgun.
Oh, that's like something out of a movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely out of a movie. But Mr. Clark could, one thing, he could call in crows, get on top of the hill, and make crow calling sounds, and pretty soon here they'd come. But he showed us one time how to, he said, boy, sometimes if you get lost, you have to eat a bird. And he would take a bird that we would kill, and you'd gut it, of course, and then just wrap it in clay and throw it in the fire and let it bake, feathers and all, head, everything. And once it was baked good and hard, you'd break that clay off, and it would strip all the feathers and everything off. And there you had, you know, a delicately roasted quail or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, living off the land.
My dad, and again, this is when wild quail, when you could find a lot of them in Arkansas, but he taught me some good lessons on how you kept permission to hunt on all these places he hunted, because often, if we had a good day, we would actually clean the quail in the field, and if we were hunting on the Bullock farm, or we'd hunt on the Honeycutt farm or the Pennington farm out that way, and he would take two or three of those quail that he had already cleaned and go by the house and ring the doorbell.
Oh, and give
and nobody
that.
Turned down quail. Yeah, would you like a few quail to put in the refrigerator? Yeah.
Well, you know, I've heard guys talk about, and you probably remember this too, that literally wear the dogs out hunting quail.
Mm-hmm.
Just wear them out. Feet would be bleeding. There were so many. And I've told you, we would hunt quail. We didn't have a dog. You didn't need a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Just flush them walking through the pastures. And, in fact, we talked with Mr. Leland about, he's obviously has a real interest in reviving the quail habitat and quail.
I thought he's got a lot of land in northwest Arkansas that he would like to do some things.
He was talking to us about it, and someone said, well, you know, there's some money with this foundation. He said, son, I don't need any money.
I need a biologist.
I want advice.
exactly.
I thought, he does not need any money.
Well,
we visited once. I don't know if you were on that trip with us or not, at the Pea Ridge National Historic Site, and Professor DeBlack and Mark Chris, it was a Civil War thing, and so the guys there at Pea Ridge actually shot a cannon for us and put on a little show, which was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the rangers there is a big bird hunter.
Oh, yeah.
And he's really passionate about establishing
Pea Ridge is one of our lead demonstration sites.
They're hoping that they can convince landowners around Pea Ridge, the site, to get in on the plan, too.
One of the things they've done at Pea Ridge is they've brought back the native grasses. They're truly trying to make it look as much like it would have looked in the 1860s.
Yeah.
And now they've got to convince surrounding landowners to get rid of fescue, which actually is bad for quail, and bring back the native Arkansas grasses. So long live the bobwhite quail. I hope they have a lot.
I think I just saw we had the Game and Fish did a seminar or something recently.
Yeah.
So I think maybe there's hope. So maybe next year, if we ever do the Hemingway again, it'll be pin raised. But, you know, within a decade, maybe our sons will be able to hunt wild quail. Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, here's to Hemingway, and I'm hungry for a quail dinner again.
Maybe some nice rum.
You've been listening to Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, a regular feature on Radio Cows. That's Rex Nelson, head of corporate communications for Simmons Bank and writer of the food blog Southern Fried. And Paul Austin, executive director of the Arkansas Humanities Council. To hear this and other great Chewing the Fat episodes in their entirety, subscribe to the Chewing the Fat podcast at cows.org/podcasts.
Radio Cows is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, visit cows.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotz, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.